am a man that plans for the worst, but hopes I'm an eternal optimist. I hope it all goes smashingly, but I plan as if they don't. It was Valentine's Day. I think we had to put the bid in and we got notice, I don't know, whatever, next day or a couple of days later. And I couldn't believe it. I used to get slagged off by half the players because on my day off, I was usually meeting someone. They're like, oh, who are you meeting today? And I was like, well, lads, I can tell you what, that door is not going to be as wide open when you finish rugby.
It's episode 86 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox, and this is your Thursday interview. And it's with none other than Mr. Jamie Heaslip. You may know him as a rugby player, but Jamie is a highly successful entrepreneur and investor. Jamie's one of those people I've had on that list of people before I started the podcast of people I would love to sit down and have a chat with. And it surpassed all my expectations. I've talked about this before, but why I started the podcast mainly was to be able to sit down and essentially have a mentor for an hour of the best high performers and entrepreneurs in Ireland and hopefully the world soon. And Jamie is exactly that. We have an incredibly in-depth conversation about a huge variety of topics. We talk about habits, planning, a day in the life of Jamie Heaslip. We talk about what he looks for in an investment. We talk about a huge variety of things. And we also get some fantastic book recommendations. So it's a really good interview. You're listening to this on Thursday, and it is day 22 out of 42 of my Momentum Challenge today. If you're not familiar with the Momentum Challenge, at the start of lockdown, I said, right, how am I going to get the most out of this lockdown? How am I going to keep myself on track to maintain a positive attitude? And I want to control the controllables, the old cliche. I said, right, what can I do? I'm going to exercise every single day. I can control that. That doesn't matter about geography limits or lockdowns. I'm in control of that. So I'm exercising every single day, doing something, whether it's a sea swim, a cycle, a run, a gym session, whatever it is, just doing something and moving every day. It's going really well. I'm absolutely loving it. And I've partnered up with Parallel Nutrition, who are helping me on, strangely enough, the nutrition side of things. They're helping me every day keep on track in terms of what I'm eating, the right kind of stuff that I'm eating, the breakfast, lunch, dinner that I should be eating to fuel myself, in terms of physical exercise, but also just the mental clarity of just when you eat right, your mental clarity goes through the roof. So I'm really enjoying that. I would highly recommend you go check them out. Parallel Nutrition. I would start on Instagram because I love looking at the food and the menus that they're putting out every single week. And you can also go and order on parallelnutrition.ie if you are based in Dublin. And that is it. Let us get into the chat with Mr. Jamie Heaslip. Jamie, welcome to the pod.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great. It's great to be on. I'm big fan of this type of format versus the sound bites that I did in a previous life.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love to be able to expand and give more context.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that's why I do it. I just love chatting and a story and not exactly what you said there. Exactly not that. Not the list of 50 questions that they have to get through in the next 30 minutes or else, we need those clips. Did you get Jamie? Did you talk to him about that? So yeah, we were literally flowing there before we got started. So let's just keep that going. Jamie, welcome to the pod. We were chatting about everything, life, COVID, wellness related there. I want to circle back on that at the end, but I want to kick off this is all about you as an entrepreneur, as an investor. We'll just kind of go back towards the end of your rugby career and just tell me, how did you become an entrepreneur? Was that the path? Were you going, when I leave rugby, I want to become involved in business, or what was the path there?
Yeah, I suppose the big question there is, what the hell is an entrepreneur? Because some people go around and say, like you say, what do you do? And they're like, I'm an entrepreneur. It's like, okay, well, what do you do? Yeah. You can't live on air. Although I have invested in a company that's trying to turn air into gold. That's their tagline. But anyway, to rewind. So I'll give you a bit of context of how I arrived at this point, but I'm going to rewind to when I'm 12. Okay. So, I'm 12, I'm showing some signs of being good at rugby. I was going to the route of my older other siblings down in Nace was Christian Brothers, Nace, primary school. into the CBS secondary school in Ace. Okay. And that was the path. And and they played rugby with their club, with the Curra. I played with Nace at underage. But I got offered a position. It wasn't a scholarship, but like I got offered a place basically in Newbridge College. And so I wouldn't have got it normally because my siblings didn't go to the school and all those sort of things, but it was kind of like a rugby scholarship, but not. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Anyway, I had to do an entry interview. So my dad's is posted abroad and my mom brings me to the interview, and they go into the principal's office and my mom's there with me, and we walk in, and I'm kind of on the way in the car. I'm like, Mom, like, what are we doing, God? Like, I don't understand. Why do you have to do an entrance interview into a school? I was like, I don't quite understand. Anyway, we go into the interview, and, you know, the principal's sitting the other side of the desk. You know, they always have this big, massive desk with loads of books on it and books behind them and certificates on the wall and all this crap, right? And, sorry, not crap, but, you know, stuff on the wall. And, you know, he has his glasses down like this and he's kind of staring over his eyes and he's got a beard on. He's got the tweed jacket, those beige quarterly bottoms. And, you know, it's a little bit, it's like that awkward heat in the office for some reason, like, and that musky smell. And we sit down anyway, and he's kind of chatting away to me and he's kind of talking about the school and the type of people that the school makes and all this sort of thing, right? And you know, he eventually gets around to ask me a couple of questions, and one of the questions he says is like, what do you want to be, you know, after telling me the type of people they make? And I was like, I want to play rugby for Ireland. And I said it straight away, and he starts laughing at me. And he starts kind of going like, what are you're kidding, right? Yeah, no way. You know, you can't say that. You're going to be X, Y, or Z. And I was kind of like, huh? And my mom, in fairness, straight away, like, I thought she would, you don't tell an Irish mammy what their son can or can't do. You don't, right? And she nearly jumped across the table at him. But she was like, you don't tell him what he can or cannot do. You don't put any limits on his dreams or his ambitions. And anyway, that went the way it did. And the reason I'm telling that story is because I was really lucky, because my dream back then, I wanted to be Simon Gagan essentially back then, right? Mm. And I got to realize that. I got to play for him, which is really, really unique. And I feel really, really lucky. But when I was doing that, I realized, you know, I realized how lucky it was, but I realized the potential it unlocks you, not just as a player, but as a person. And when you get to follow your dream or follow your passion and have a really, really clear purpose and really clear goals, and just amazing things can happen. So when I was playing, I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? If I put myself in the box of just a rugby player and just an Irish rugby player, you know, what does that mean for my kind of identity, I suppose, when that stops, you know what I mean? So this kind of hit me early on in my career. So it kind of hit me in 2009, I'm on the Lions tour, and it just finishes up. And so that year has been an unbelievable year for me. I'm playing 4 years professional at that stage. We've won the league with Leinster. We won that in 2009. Then we won Europe for the first time for Leinster. We won the Grand Slam with Ireland. We go on a Lions tour. We don't win the Lions tour, but it's like, and at the same time, a study comes out that the average career length for a player is 7 years. So I'm there kind of going, right, I'm 4 years in. I'm past the halfway point. It's all downhill for me here. I better start thinking about, okay, what do I have a passion in, you know, for life after rugby? And so I just started following my interests and my passions. And then that just opened up the door of, you know, you got to remember as well, while playing, you're probably at your most capital rich time in terms of liquidity with the money coming in and what you're getting paid. And also at the time, you got to remember 2008, 2009, 2010, we're going through pre-COVID, the biggest recession we ever hit. So what are you going to do with this money? You know what I mean? So, you know, I put money aside to go, okay, I'm going to buy the home that I didn't think I could have, and try have little, no debt when I'm finished with that. That was thing. I'm going to put money into a pension. I had a pension since I was 21. People always laugh at me when I say that. So it's like, okay, that's what we're doing there. You know, and then I'm looking around going, okay, what am I going to do with it? How am I going to create value? And I'm a big believer that you maximize value and create value and create wealth. Now, wealth is a different definition to different people, but either way, I think it's by owning things and having ownership and taking ownership. So that's how I'm on journey. Like the first thing I looked at was a restaurant. I partnered with the guys from Joe Burger at the time and partnered with them for about 2 years. Essentially kind of had like a convertible loan note, which I actually didn't convert. After 2 years, I stepped away. That gave me insight. I literally went, I like food. I like to eat.
It's a good place to start, to be fair.
Yeah, but then after 2 years, I was like, I'm not getting into this business. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Because it's a passion business, you know, it's a lifestyle choice. And I understand that, okay, when businesses are a lifestyle choice, the sacrifice that has to go into that is insane. That's what rugby was. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that.
What was your first step, though? How did you, you know, that seems incredible awareness for someone at coming into the peak of their original career. It seems incredible awareness to be able to look outside and go, okay, I want to get involved in other things. How did you actually do that though? What was the logistics of going, okay, I'm going to talk to the guys in Joe Burger. I'm going to get involved here. Cause I think that's the part a lot of people fall down in. They're like, oh, I'd love to do something else, but they don't actually take the first steps. What did you do?
Oh, like that part was probably the easiest part if I'm honest. Right. Well, firstly, the funniest question I used to always get asked while playing is like, so what do you do? And you go, oh, I play rugby. And it's like, well, what else do you do? Like, because people literally think you're sitting on your hands all day. You go out and maybe throw the ball around for an hour during the day and that's it. But like, you there's a lot more to it. Like literally, I'd be in Leinster for 7 o'clock in the morning, would be session number, like activity number one, let's call it. And you wouldn't be leaving until 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And that's Monday, Tuesday. Thursday, it's a bit less. Friday, it's a whole lot less. And then you play Saturday, Sunday off, rinse and repeat, basically. But everything, you got to remember everything around that: food, sleep, nutrition, how you recover. Like it's a whole lifestyle piece. So you get very good at managing your time. Because they send out the schedule to you and they go like, okay, these are the different meetings, bang, bang, bang. These are the, this is strength sessions, fitness sessions, pitch sessions, team meetings, team review, bang, bang, bang. And then you've got to take your own responsibility in terms of the other stuff like recovery, sleep, nutrition. So you get very good at, okay, establishing what process works. And then to get sustainability and consistency over not just weeks, but months and years, you got to look at the macro picture. So I always used to zoom out and go, okay, right. Take just one normal season, right? Take the seasons in the year, right? You got, you know, spring, summer, autumn, winter, right? In a season, you've got preseason, the main season, championship season, postseason. But you can bring that down even further into like say a quarter, for example, right? And it goes like derby games into Europe, into internationals, comes back down. And you kind of end up in that cycle. Then you hit Six Nations and you hold on for dear life for about 3 months because then you're in the knockout rugby part, right? And then obviously you're into recovery postseason. So it's taking that and identifying, okay, when do I need to dial up my strengths or need to dial up certain priorities and dial others down? And then when you're dialing those strengths and priorities down and you're reestablishing that balance, because we need to establish what the balance is. So you're consistently, your output is pretty high, but you can't have your foot on the floor the whole time. So when you take your foot off, okay, what's that momentum? You know, is it at a pretty good level or not? And so when I used to dial it down and I'd certain times, I'd proactively go out and reach people in the marketplace in different industries that I was interested in, go have conversations with them.
Okay.
I would place an all about teams and I know what my strengths are in the team and I'm going to get the guy over here that's What are his strengths? What are his best? I'm not going to do them. So I'm going to get the best kind of financial advisor around the place that can help me with that. I'm going to get the best accountant who can help me with that. I'm going to get the best this, that, and the other. Because I did it in rugby, because I'd get the best S&C guy, the best nutritionist guy, the best, you know, person for massages or physical therapy or whatever. Tack on, insert talent or skill set.
Yeah.
And I had no problem going to the best or asking who is the best or the top three. And so just spreading the network and talking to them, and then, but not doing it all the time was key. And I think that was a bit of a perception that I was always doing that, but, and people even ask me that now. And no, I'm kind of like a portfolio manager. So at the center, like rugby, what used to be like rugby was at the center, priority number one. And then I had a portfolio of things around that. And I kind of dip in and out. Mm. And I was like, when I finished rugby, I was like, oh, that's how I've set everything up.
Yeah.
So I just took rugby, and that's now a portfolio thing because I do commentating around it, punditry around it. And the main thing now for me is coaching, you know, is performance and wellness coaching. And that's kind of sits at the center, but I still dip in out and all the other things because it's just set up in that way. And it works for me, but it was very much being proactive, identifying what I'm interested in, and just asking. And this is the great thing about Ireland. It's a village, man. It is a village. And because I had an interest in the tech sector, like it's even smaller then. And like you're like, you literally have the head of like Google EMEA, Facebook EMEA, Salesforce, they're usually Irish people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they probably, you know, your next door neighbor's cousin's friend or something like that. It's, you know what I mean? Someone, like something like that.
And LinkedIn as well. You go, oh, they know someone else.
I'm just asking.
It's unbelievable.
It's just asking. And look, rugby definitely helped open the door.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think your name opened a lot of doors initially?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But like, I mean, you can shove the door open a little bit, but then you got to kick it open.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, what's the worst could happen? Like, yeah. Do you say yes or do you say no? Like,
you've gone straight into it. I was going to do this at the end because I heard you on a friend of ours, Scott McInnes, you're on his podcast, and I heard you talking about planning. I'm an absolute planning nerd. Bring me down that rabbit hole because you talked about it there, your portfolio. How do you plan? Because you talked about having 10-year plans, 5-year plans, yearly plans.
Yeah.
How do you plan your day, week, quarter, year, and then your 10-year?
So again, it's what I used to do in rugby, but like I go now, like once I go September to September, that's my year of planning essentially. Okay. And because it's what the rugby season is.
I was going
to
ask,
right?
Yeah. And then it kind of dawned on me. I was like, it's rugby season, obviously.
Yeah. And it's like old habits die hard, right? Yeah. And so what do I do? Like so I establish 10-year, 5-year, 3-year, 1 year. And then I break the 1 year down in quarterly. Now, the 10 years are like, it's not too far off like win the lotto scenario.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's really lofty. It's like ideal scenario, yeah, in 10 years. What is that? What's the feeling like? Put yourself there. What do you want it to be? Mm. Right. And then put it this way, as you go further down that funnel, it starts to get a little bit realer and realer and realer and realer and realer. And the actions that you want to move towards it, you know, it's like you want to, like you set goals for, you're talking every rugby team, it started a year ago, we want to win the European Cup. Okay. But like, how do you start doing that? You know, or how do you eat an elephant? You start with the first bite. Okay. So you gotta break it down. So that's why I get quite analytical of it, because, or not analytical, but why I break it down so much, because, you know, in rugby, it got to a stage where I would take that macro view of the season. Then I'd break it down into, okay, you could kind of go quarters. So you could basically work to the November series, then work to Six Nations. And then, oh, sorry, it was thirds. And then kind of go, well, it was quarters, because then you'd go, okay, Six Nations to June. And then it was kind of off season into preseason training. So I took that as a block. And you just kind of, at the start of the year, I'd give a rough outline of how I saw it. And then at the start of each quarter, I would take my guidelines, or I used Olympic rings as an analogy. So, because I was a big Michael Phelps fan, and I remember reading his book in the Beijing Olympics, and I'm quite visual. So I had five areas of my life that were very important to me, that for me to be at my best, they all had to be in a good place, essentially.
Yeah.
And so at the start of every quarter, I would see what it looked like. You know what I mean? The ups and downs, those highs and lows, moments where I had to dial it up or dial it down. And then I would go, okay, well, I'm dialing rugby's coming priority number one here. So I'm dialing these rugby ones up or stuff around that and dialing the others down. But on the other side of that, or before that, how do I make up for it? Mm-hmm. And so that would map out that 3 month window. And then you'd obviously go then by month and then week by week. And that's kind of how I do it. And then it helped me with games, because then come game day, like I just, in my own head, I was like, I've got the work done.
Yeah.
And then, so you can just go and play. And it's trusting that consistency and discipline around to the process, which helps me. It's like that Hemingway phrase. It's like, people are always looking at the end result, and they're looking at you winning things or doing things in games, but they don't really, like, it's gradually, then suddenly they're only looking at the tiny, tiny fraction of the end of it. Yeah. They're not looking at the start of it. Like I was talking to Stephen Smith from Kitman Labs, one of the first companies I invested with, and I invested in them in 2013. Wow. Okay.
Okay.
So that's 7 years now. Right. And if they look, they're going well. And if they ever have an exit, they'll have an exit or whatever. Right. But like, let's say it's next year, it'll be 8 years, but people are like, oh my God, that's overnight. It's like, no, that's the quickest ever 8 years if that's overnight. You know what I mean? So it's the same with
people's
sport.
Definitions as well. People's definitions of overnight. They're like, oh, 8 years, blink of an eye. And they don't see all the work it's gone in 8 years. Like 8 years is a good chunk of your life.
I'll give you another example. Fevertree.
Oh, yes.
Right? Because I have two pubs, right? Fevertree were, before they launched the market, they were going for about 3 or 4 years before they even launched the product properly into the market.
Wow.
Then it hit. And like, look, there's a bit of timing and luck, and there's timing and luck in everything as well, by the way. Yeah. Sometimes people get a bit carried away thinking, you know, the smell off their own manure a little bit, but like, so, timing it can just be unbelievably lucky with it sometimes in an industry. But they were going for 3 years, and then it hit, and then like they went hard at it, and I think the lads exited after 7 years, and whoever owns it now. But like, you know, it wasn't just overnight like that. You know what I mean? They had to graft hard for a long time.
I think that's the biggest issue, because people reach out after a certain podcast and they're like, oh yeah, but how did he start? And I was like, just start. How do you plan? As in, like, do you sit down on a Sunday and go, do you have matrices, or let's go super nerdy? Like, how exactly do you do it on a week basis?
I see, because I'm in a good place now, right? So I know what my main kind of strengths are. I know my kind of buckets that are important to me, very clear. Like literally, like right now, Gary, I look to the left here on the big screen, just to the left of me. I have my Q4 goals. I've two left basically out of them, and they're all stepping stones to year 2021 and so on and so forth. But I've done that big yearly kind of goal set. I revisit the 10-year and 5-year and 3-year every time off the back of that, just to make sure I'm still aligned, because we all change and situations change and stuff like that. But on a more, let's say, regular basis, once I do the quarterly one, which is a bit of a deeper dive, I look at a monthly outline, but then every week I have, I call it like working on my rocks, my big rocks. Now, when I say that to people, they're like, what's that mean? So basically every Sunday, I kind of spend half an hour to an hour just kind of going, okay, this is the week coming ahead. What are the three things I'm working on this week? That's really the important one for the overarching goal here. And you kind of plan it out. And for me, schedules work. I put it into calendar. If it's not in the fucking calendar, it doesn't happen.
I was very impressed with your flow, by the way. I was very impressed with the interview flow. You've set up the automatic flow of putting something in the calendar.
Nice. So
I'm going to steal that, by the way.
Yeah, Calendly, for anyone, like, it's a dream because it saves a lot of waste of time going back and forth. Oh, well, this time worked. No, I can't. Right? Saves all that and lets you set your schedule and priorities first. And then let other people kind of work around it without saying they're working around your schedule.
Yeah, not been a prima donna about it. Like, oh, I only do Mondays at 10.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to say why that time is not filled up. And to be honest, look, if it doesn't work, let me know. More often than not,
yeah,
people find a time that works for everyone. I also use Todoist for my kind of to-do list. Or tacking things on it the whole time.
Todoist. Is that an app, Jamie?
Yeah. It's
I'll put it in the show notes.
Todoist. I use that. I use Notely, which because I need to write stuff quite visual. I'm trying to be more and more sustainable, so I use my iPad quite a bit now, and I use Notely. So Notely is just great for scribbling. It's a good iPad app for writing with the Apple Pencil, and then you can also send it. You can sync it up with Evernote, which Evernote's like my database for everything. It kind of all gets dumped in there.
Okay.
Everywhere. So I just have everything at any one time because they're across all platforms, right? They're on your laptop, they're on your phone, or you know what I mean. So I'm always on. It sticks with me wherever I am. So, but Sunday working on the big rocks, laying it out. And then trying to be consistent with your schedule. Now, look, this, I love the Jocko Willink phrase, which is discipline equals freedom. And you got to be consistent with it. But you can also have rigidity in that.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
But you just got to be careful. Like, I know, like, one of my top five strengths of, like, when I do these kind of Gallup strength finder things, it's significance, futuristic, discipline, consistency, focus, right? Mm-hmm. Which are great. But the discipline, consistency, focus, the basement view of that, like, is you get too rigid in it. So you do have to realize that and have a bit of flexibility with it. Mm-hmm. So people, like, I'm coming across like I'm just by my schedule the whole time. But you do have to have a bit of fluidity in it. But it's best to set a plan.
Yeah.
You can always change plan, but if you don't have a plan,
I find that as well. For when you work for yourself as well, you kind of have all this time. You've no time, but you've all this time. And it's how you fill that. And I found I was kind of filling days, 12, 13, 14 hour days. And it was only when I was like looking back at the end of each day doing reviews going, what concrete things? Like you said there, what did I move forward on a big scale today? Or was I just doing admin-y stuff all day? Been real busy. And I find that now that I'm far more disciplined with the schedule, it's far more rigid, but it's far more flexible because I've it done.
It's funny you say that, Gary. Like a really good tool that I've used with clients in a coaching context, it's really basic, like a time matrix. We've all come across them, you know, where you go urgent, not urgent. And you go important, not important. And if you start putting those, seeing where you're spending your time, like you kind of, in a really weird way, you want to be in the important, not urgent space, because that's more strategic, longer term thinking. But obviously you end up with urgent and important quite a bit. But you don't want to be in the bottom two categories.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And there's a lot of things there. Super easy because it's kind of comfortable. Do a bit of email. Like, doesn't mean anything, but yet you've.
So how do you outsource it, or how do you systemize it, or do you use like independent contractors for certain things?
See, that's the thing. I think people do. I think it's finding. I think you're dead right there with the time metrics, though. You know, finding what's urgent and what's important, and then. You know, if you have a little bit of time at the end, you'll find you can fly through email and admin stuff if you have to. You can knock that down to 30, 40 minutes a day, whereas before you can easily jump in and start the day and then you're firefighting, you're going left, right, left, right, left, right. So the strategic thing is key. So I'm really glad.
I try not to hit emails till lunchtime. I try. Yeah.
That's tough.
Not always successful.
That is hard.
Like I might have a quick scan, but see, the thing is like, top of my agenda every day is I do a thing around coaching discipline. I'd say disciplined in my, I spend half an hour to 40 minutes just reading, listening, watching something around coaching. Okay. And then I block off my next block of time is like, I call it deep work. Obviously the Cal Newport kind of,
it's propping up my column. It's propping up my monitor here.
So, you know, it's like, okay, get rid of some distractions and focus in on one or two things that are going to move the needle for you a little bit, or you need to get off your plate or something, you know what I mean? Whatever, insert project that you're working on.
So take me through a day in your life really fast in terms of you've kind of highlighted the first two. Are they the first two things you do?
Oh, no, I'm up since six. So I've done a few things before that. Yeah.
Do you have routines? Do you have morning routines? Do you have things you do every day?
I do. And then my 2-year-old daughter kind of throws a spanner in the works. But in essence, I look to... obviously, you have to be a bit fluid given restrictions and stuff and how they flex in and out, right? But in general, it's kind of like the perfect day, I suppose, would be up at about 6. First 20 minutes is get the heart going or get moving. So I'll go for some sort of 20-minute cardio thing. Not flat out at all, actually. Just heart rate up to like anywhere from 140 to kind of 160, 170, and just keep it there for 20 minutes. Or I'll do 20 minutes of kind of like yoga. Or I'll do, what did I do this morning? I did kind of like a circuit of 10 minutes of kind of basically kind of like Tabata training, but just with body, just your body weight. And then I did 10 minutes of skipping, and I just did a quick 5 minutes with, I have a slam ball. So I just do a quick 5 minutes with slam ball. Then I quickly flip into sit down, 10 minutes meditation, a few minutes then kind of journaling, as in like kind of purpose, how you're going to wear that purpose every day, values. And then kind of like gratitude, like five things you're grateful for, and then a little bit about how you see the perfect day going for you. Then if my daughter hasn't risen by that stage and called me, I get a quick 20 minutes in of using something like Blinkist, which is a great app, obviously. I don't know if you come across Blinkist.
I've heard of it. I've never used it. I've heard of it though.
Yeah. So it's like 8, 10, 12 blinks, which are basically like summaries of a book. You know what I mean? So I'll flick through that or I'll read a book. I'm actually reading. That's the one I'm reading right now.
Oh, it's good.
So yeah, it's grand. Yeah.
I'll get you to actually just put that at the back of your mind. I'll get you to recommend a book at the end. I'll get you to recommend a couple of books that have had an impact on you. So keep that at the back of your mind. So go ahead and read a book.
And then that's it. Then the next, like once I kind of, like that's basically a rough framework that's come from the 5 a.m. club.
It's a great book.
And then usually my daughter Harper is up. So we get up with her. You know, she will stick Peppa Pig on for her, give her a bottle. And then I'm basically then making a coffee, having a amino acids, vitamins, and that kind of, that's from about 7-ish till about anywhere from 8 to 8:30. Then I'm kind of cold shower and then hit the desk basically. And then that's when I flip into those kind of two agenda items. Unless something else is kind of, I've had to put something in, maybe a client meeting or something like that has to go in earlier, but that's pretty much rinse and repeat Monday to Friday, and that's it.
And has that changed much since COVID? Would you have been out in the road a lot? Would you have been doing a lot of face-to-face? Has that changed a lot?
It hasn't changed a lot. Like I work from home anyway, and previous to that I worked in Google for 14 months, and they do most internal teachings, most client meetings, internal meetings via Zoom, or not Zoom, Google Hangout. So I got quite used to that.
Okay.
So I would have actually done a lot. And I have clients who are abroad as well. So I would have done a lot like this. So I don't travel a whole lot. I travel enough still, even with rugby. You know, I do a lot of commentary and punditry still. So you're away over and back to London for a day or something at the weekends anyway. So I try to limit how much I travel. It works for me.
So bring me back to your first investment. So obviously you did the restaurant for a couple of years. What was that journey like, kind of trying to understand what was going on, do I like it? Do I not like it? And how did it not put you off, say, your kind of entrepreneurial career? Did, having a bad experience, not a bad experience, but having something you were like, no, I actually don't want to do it. How did that not deter you?
It was just a lesson in the types of businesses or the role that you want to play in a business. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, it was an interesting learning. Like I remember, like, again, it comes back to having really good people around you. So like, I remember my kind of financial advisor, my accountant at the time, they were very reluctant for me to get involved in it. And I was like, no, I kind of want to do it and I want to learn. And I understand they were like, more failed than 60, da, 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 all this sort of thing. And I was like, okay, I get that. So how do we set it up? And that's why we came up with it. We did it's basically like a convertible loan note for them. And kind of wrapped it up in that and wrapped up brand ambassador kind of into it and stuff. But like in the food industry, it gave me an idea that the importance of having an unbelievable team in that, it actually informed a lot for the pubs for me, the importance of having a really good team around there or having a really good operator in there who has oodles of experience in that industry. Because if you're not going to be there and you're having that portfolio managed style, there's a lot of trust there. You get robbed left, right, and center because it's a cash business, right? You know, you've got to manage people's tastes and trends and all that sort of thing if that's what you're trying to do. And that's what like Bear was at the start. It was kind of trying to do this certain trend, right? And all that informed me when I came to the pubs, for example, where I went, right, we didn't want to be a trendy spot. Like we didn't want to get into the late night scene. We wanted to be consistent. We wanted somewhere you kind of is going to be there in 5 and 10 years time, not in, you know, gone in a trend has passed in a year or 2 years. And then I wanted someone in that industry who's been in it for ages, who's around our age. You know what I mean? And that's how we came across Noel Anderson. And then we met him as a person, liked him, got to know him, looked at how he operated.
Was that your next investment after the restaurants?
Oh, in chronologically, very first one I did was in a neck implant, a medical device. And then the first, then it was Kitman, then it was Bear.
Okay.
Then it was, was it Lovin? I think it was Lovin Media then. Mm-hmm. And then it was Pointy and then Urban Vault. And then.
That's quite a lineup, Jamie. Like that's quite in terms of. In terms of investment, I think a lot of experienced investors would kind of be happy looking at that on their portfolio going, I've had a good 10-year run there. So how did that happen? Because that's a stellar lineup.
Well, only one of them will come home. You know what I mean?
Yes, anyone listening who's in business will look at them and go, I like them.
The funny thing, but this is the thing, and this is something, another learning you take. I've seen how like some founders think they're millionaires because they've just raised a lot of money or something like that.
Oh, that's my pet peeve, Jamie. Oh, don't start me. That's my thing. I only had that.
I'm hitting all your soft spots today.
I was chatting to the lads. I was chatting to people through the week and I was like, oh, don't start me on like, you wouldn't put out a press release going, AIB have just agreed to loan us 3 million. You wouldn't. Because you're like the lads are leveraged up, aren't they? Whereas, go on, give me your spin on it.
That's the thing. So I've seen that with founders where some founders think they're millionaires, right? So I go to them, oh, okay, yeah, valuation is X and you own that percent, sell it. sell your shares.
I like that.
Who are you going to sell them to? Who's going to buy them?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and then they all go, oh, well, IPO. And I was like, ugh. Do you know how many companies actually IPO?
I think it's external validation, isn't it? Instead of seeking it in the right places, which is only your customers, they seek it in other places. And it kind of become a fetish there for a little while, I think. Especially
it's a problem. That's what happens because you kind of, it takes their eyes off the prize a little bit and sorry. So what that informs me is like, are people more interested in like originally when you said entrepreneur thing, are they the kind of person that wants to say, I'm an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or are they a doer?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're like, they're focused and they know what they're doing. And they know what their company's about, what the company's trying to do. And that's something I definitely look out for. But it informs me in terms of when you're making the investment. Okay. Like, so, sorry, where this is originally going is like, I've written them all off. Like, there's zero in my book.
Interesting.
Like, zero. I am a man that plans for the worst, but hopes, I'm an eternal optimist. I hope it all goes smashingly, but I plan to make sure I plan as if they don't.
Yeah, that's exactly how I approach it. I was like, I always make a worst case scenario for any business I'm getting involved in. Can we make money in the worst case scenario? Yes, we can.
Yeah. Great.
Off we go. If we can't, or oh, we might if this, oh, nah, not interested.
What's the exit strategy? You know what I mean? Like, how are you actually, so how are you going to capture value? Like, it's very easy in the pubs, for example. It's a cash positive business, well, maybe not right now, but it's a cash positive business. And, you know, you can, at the end of the year, you either pay a dividend or you don't, you know what I mean? Or you can work in there and take a wage or whatever, right? You know, but when you're an investor, it's like, okay, like, how am I extracting value from this? And some people think they love, it's like the lotto, like it's like people doing the lotto, like they're dreaming of that, you know, you got to be in it to win it, and that winning millions when you normally win nothing, you know what I mean?
How did you develop that mentality though, Jamie? Because I think with a lot of first-time investors and a lot of first-time entrepreneurs, you kind of, you're so emotionally involved. You're like, this is me. I am the business. The business is me. We are intertwined. The two are just, that's it. It's a personal representation of myself. So how did you take that view? Because that's easier said than done.
Isn't it true? And I'm very lucky with the timing. Because you got to, again, coming back to the original timing, we were in the middle of pre-COVID, one of the biggest recessions, if not the biggest recessions we'd ever faced. So once I had taken care of the basics of those things that I started out with in terms of what do you want to do when you're like, when you're finished rugby, ideal scenario, I was like, have a house that you didn't think you'd have, a home for your family with little to no debt on it. Okay. And that's still my goal now, to get rid of debt on my primary residence. That's the goal, right? When I look up the kind of financial bucket as such, right? So how I got there was along the way, you know, I've had some amazing, I'm very, very lucky, some of the mentors I've come across. And a lot of the mentors that I've leaned on, I've been business mentors. One of the very first guys I had was a guy called Mick Carney, who is, or is he still? He was the guy who brought the Snap franchise to Ireland.
Someone was talking to me about him very recently. They mentioned him as a great person to listen to.
And then Homestead, you remember, you know Homestead?
Yeah.
It's like the at-home care for people. And he ended up being the Ireland rugby manager, actually, as well. And so Mick was a big mentor of mine. There are other kind of mentors who I know they just want to be, they don't want me to mention them, but there's other mentors who are in different industries who I check in with once a quarter and who give me these kind of steers. And I'm very, very lucky. My father-in-law is unbelievable as well at business and you know, when you get 5, 10, half an hour or pints with him, it's great to kind of pick his brains and get his point of view and on different things, particularly the pubs, for example, because he would have been involved in that world for a while and different things. So very lucky to have those kind of people and lean on them for learnings and questions. And, you know, and they come at you with questions of, okay, like, how are you getting out of this, or how are you getting extracting value along the path of this. So
that was something I wanted to ask you, actually, mentors. Is that something you actively sought out, or is that something that just organically evolved?
Oh yeah. Again, it comes back to that thing. I know teams, right? Yeah. And we're all kind of like, we're all standing on the shoulders of giants, right? So there's always someone who's kind of gone before you that has either reframed an industry or expectation or standard or, you know, in something. And trying to find those people. And this is, like I said, the great thing about Ireland is that usually you can kind of find a way to get introduced to them and grab, you might only grab half an hour with them once every quarter, but it's a half an hour that you don't have, you know what I mean? And builds up to 2 hours over a year. So
How do you frame that conversation? Because literally, this is why I started the podcast. A, I want to learn, and B, I want to connect with people and actually learn actively from people over an hour. It's pretty much exactly why I started the podcast. How do you frame that conversation with mentors?
It's a good question. Tell them how great they are at the start.
It always helps. And he reaches out to me and went, love the podcast. I'm like, yes, what can I do for you?
So, yeah, like, I mean, so I do that. You know, look, again, like I'm very well aware of how rugby helped open the door to a lot of it. But it still baffles me. So like I used to get slagged off by half the players because on my day off, I was usually meeting someone. They're like, oh, who are you meeting today?
Nerd!
yeah. And I was like, well, lads, I can tell you what, that door is not going to be as wide open when you finish rugby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Take the chance now. Take that opportunity. Take that advantage that you have, you know?
I always say that to students. When students reach out to me, I'm like, you have a golden opportunity here. While you're in college, anyone will chat to you because you're not a threat. You know, everyone remembers back when they were a student, they were starting off, you know, alumni. I was like, tap into alumni network, literally chatting to a lad in UCD during the week. He's like, oh, how do I, you know, build a network? How do I, you know, get these people? I was like, tap the alumni network.
I don't know. Like, it's funny networking. I just don't know if it's that natural to us, you know?
No, it's not. It's not. Oh, Jesus.
But see, this is the weird thing.
Uncomfortable.
We're like, we're unbelievably social people. Yes. You get us in a room, we'll get the crack on,
and
a great phone, we'll chat to you all day. But you get us in that like real formal networking type of session, and it gets a little bit, I don't know, we're not as good, or I don't know, maybe we're just not as brash as others. But
I think a lot, to be honest, Jamie, I think a lot of networking is very wanky as well. A lot of it, anytime you brand something a networking event, it's generally useless because.
Yeah, but like, this is the thing. I'd be like, but like, you don't have to go to those events.
Yeah,
you
know exactly. What I mean? Like, exactly. There's a million ways to do it. And it's better, literally one-to-one, what we're doing right now, as opposed to going into a random room in a random hotel and going, oh, serendipity is going to lead me to Jamie Heasley. You know, and people do that though. They go through the motions of like, oh no, I'll just go to this network event and this one. And sometimes, you know, I'm going to get a chance. And the only time they're useful is if you're up there talking to people going, this is what I've learned over 45 minutes. That's the only time those things are useful, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, I'd agree with you there. And it's, you know, it one of the reasons I created the pub is so I could have people there. I could win on both sides. I could connect with people while making money. But it's something that we're probably not great at, or maybe we don't proactively go at, but like we're very, like you got to think about, like, look at our marketplace, right? The amount of FDI in Ireland is mental, and it's only going to get bigger going forward, particularly as we become more and more of a beachhead for, like, we're going to be the only native English speaking country in the EU. Mm-hmm. Like, so you have all these companies coming into Ireland, reach out, you know, and try and connect with people, or, you know, try and grab that coffee with that person. Or I've been plaguing people on during COVID because it's over Zoom, you know what I mean? Because you know,
you're not going anywhere. You've nothing there to be doing. You may as well chat to me.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, I'm really blessed to like, mentors have played a massive role in reshaping and rethinking how I look at all manner of things.
Talk to me about the pubs. You mentioned it there a few minutes ago. Talk to me about that. After being in the restaurant game, how did the pubs come about? Because you imagine they're quite similar. You might have been put off.
Well, no, what I knew from the restaurants is that the margin in alcohol in drinks is way better, right? Not as perishable, a better margin, easier to manage. You know what I mean? As in, like, you have a kitchen, you have your head chef, you have all sorts of different people in the kitchen, right? In a bar, like, you can have two or three people and they can amass loads of volume, okay? Mm-hmm. So your costs are a little bit less, your margin is a little bit better. And honestly, really, I was there going, all right, so we get free into all these different nightclubs or into these different bars. And they might, so this is when I was playing and going out and stuff. And they're like, you might get a bit of free drink off these fellas or whatever. And I was like, look at all the different places we're getting associated with different things, right? Like, I mean, Dublin win the GAA. Everyone knows where to go the next day, or that night.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so different places get associated with things. So I was like, okay, there's some value here that we're losing out on. So, and then you look around the market, like there's no actual pub that is associated with a rugby player that a rugby player owns.
Smart.
You know?
Yeah, very smart.
And then I was like, right, okay. And then I was talking to different people, talking to Rob. Myself and Rob used to talk about this a lot, Rob Kearney. And then a bit of serendipity happened and we got introduced to Noel Anderson. And Noel is a year older than me, been in the industry since he was 16. A really, really good guy, knows his stuff, right? And so we partnered with Noel, right, we're going to keep looking. We looked at different places. We got very close. I remember what Russell's used to be in Ranelagh.
Oh, yes, yeah.
With the terrace.
Yeah.
I loved it because of the terrace.
Yeah.
I remember when that came up and we looked at that, but we got outbid on that. And we were looking. And then Bellamy's came up. And I looked at Bellamy. We all looked at Bellamy's and we went, oh my God, you're like 150 meters from the RDS.
I always wondered this. I was like, how did the lads end up at that pub? Because it couldn't, it's like the official Leinster little clubhouse. Like it couldn't be closer.
Oh, we were like, and then you're what? 400 or 500 meters from the Aviva Stadium. Yeah. And I knew how busy the RDS is, not just from rugby, but like events.
Concerts. Conferences. Yeah. People
same
forget
with the,
that.
Same with the Aviva Stadium. And then at the time as well, you gotta remember the amount of building that was going on around the place, yeah. Right? Was insane. You had AIB headquarters across the road as well, right? So there was loads of people around the place. And we were like, Jesus. There's going to be a lot of competition. And it was one of those, what do they call it? Closed kind of envelope auctions. Mm. So you had to have, your offer in at a certain time, closed off in a closed envelope. And then they opened it all up and basically highest bidder wins. Right. So it was like mind games going on here. Like, yeah. Right. And I was like, lads, I don't care. Like, we basically sat down. I remember us all talking and we're like, oh, what are we going to do? We're going to offer this. We're going to offer that. Da, da, da. Are they making a move on it? What are they going to, you know, and all these mind games. I was like, all right, look, we got to put our best foot forward here. Like how much, like we know that the pub is, we're going to do something to the pub. So that's going to cost X.
Yeah.
Right. How, like, let's not try and save Y here. Let's put our best foot forward here because there's going to be huge demand. And we did. And we bought it. We got it. And we're like, it was an unbelievable moment. It was Valentine's Day. I think we had to put the bid in. And we got notice, I don't know, whatever, next day or a couple of days later. I couldn't believe it. But I think a lot of people tried to be really, really smart.
It's the psychology of auction as well. People get a bit funny about it, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But we just put our best foot forward. We won. I don't know actually by how much we won.
I was going to ask you, do you know after the fact, do they say, oh, you are the winning bidder by X thousand?
No. I don't recall it anyway. But for me, I remember people think, oh, no, they paid that for it. But like at the time, you got to remember as well, this is where timing is everything. We bought that in 2014. Okay. I think it was 2014. Yeah. 2014. Like that market was still low.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we're very lucky with when we were buying it. Cause then like you tried to buy a pub last year and it was frothy as hell trying to buy a pub in Dublin. So we're very lucky with being able to go for it at relatively low point in the marketplace as well. So that's kind of a lot of the reason why it informed me to go for it. And then we just haven't looked back really since.
How do you team up with people on projects? You said you find the best people, but there's a few of you involved in that. So how do you pick people to work with, I guess?
Actually, it was funny. Myself and Rob, and we were sitting down and we were like, you know, will we offer this to any other lads? And well, Rob was like, obviously I'm bringing in Dave. I was like, yeah, grand, get that, right? I was like, but Rob, I was like, look at the two of us. We're like, you know, people might go, the epitome, even though neither of us are from Dublin, they might go, you're the epitome of like,
I know what you mean. You know,
the perception of you is a certain thing. We were like, yeah. And I was like, well, I know a fella that's, you know, likes a night out and is good crack and is very country. And he was like, who? And I was like, Shawnee. You know what I mean? You know, the Tullo Tank, like. So we asked Shawnee, and he was in on it as well. Obviously, we had to present the business model and how it all looked and da-da-da-da-da, and he didn't want to get involved. And it just worked. But I look at, it's funny, when I get asked about investing in different things, first, the idea has got to catch you, right? Yeah. And whatever it is. But then where I spend most of my time is like the, how do I put this? Like the financial advisor or the accountant, you know, they look at the due diligence and the finance part of it. Mm. I look at, once the idea catches me, okay, what's the person about? What's his track record like? You know, is he a doer or is he a sayer? You know what I mean? What's he like? What are his values? You know, how is he dealing with the team right now? Has they proven the concept or is this completely imaginary land right now? And then I just see the dynamic of how he's getting on with others and what, because the founders are going to establish what that culture is going forward, really. Mm. And it's, I know the importance of having a really good culture and really strong values and living by them and the impact that can have on the chances of you being successful.
Do you have a process you go through?
Because that's what I know.
Yeah. Do you have a process you go through in terms of, do you do certain things? Do you speak to this person? Or what's your, when someone comes to you, because I'm sure it happens all the time, you get pitched a new idea going, oh, Jamie, you'd love to have involved in this. What do you do?
What do I do? I have the first things first, like I said, I'll look at anything. And I guess I'm sending across, I have a look, and then like I kind of, whatever my gut is saying then, you know, I kind of push back on it. If I like it, then I might pass it on to my kind of the guys I lean on and that who kind of look at things deeper for me. And then if it kind of passed that, then I, you know, obviously sit down with the person, start chatting to them a little bit more about what they're thinking, where they're going, find out more about them, their backstory, talk to one or two people that they might not know that I'm connected with through them and stuff like that.
I like that.
And then you kind of get to a point and then you start, then for me personally, I've got to understand, okay, do they want me as an investor or do they want me almost as like an ambassador investor? And I'm very, very clear on that. I was like, ambassador, that's a fee as well. Investor is just money. You know what I mean? Or network or something like that. But I know what my value is here. And then that gets into a different conversation as well.
Okay.
And, you know, I have different ways and means of doing that with different companies. So it's not a straightforward step. Like, I mean, during lockdown now, I've done one investment and I nearly have another one done. But that second one, which I thought would be really, really quick, for example, you know, has gone back and forth now on a couple of different things around that. Are you an ambassador or are you an investor piece? And then what does that look like? And I'm just very, very clear on it and clean on it because I don't think people, and that's obviously off the experience I've had from being ambassadors for different companies and sponsorships and all that sort of stuff. So
I think that's something that's just you talked about piece. Irish people in terms of networking. I think that's the other thing is transparency and clarity of going, this is what we're doing. This is when we're doing it. This is what it's going to cost you. There's a lot of kind of like, sure, we'll see how that goes now with Jamie and Sean.
Oh, no, maybe down the road. No. Yeah, I'm not having that. Ooh, like,
gives me the shivers.
Yeah, I'm, but it's like being clear with someone. I'll say no to some really, really quickly as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I go, look, I've said no to some absolute beauty. I said no to Fulfill, for example, right? Yeah. I know.
What was in your head there? What was the reason? I think that's more interesting why you say no sometimes than why you say yes.
Well, actually, we couldn't work out the deal.
Okay.
Part. You know, I didn't concede on a couple things. And when I look back, I was like, fucking Egypt. Like, why? You know what I mean?
That's easy in hindsight, though. That's, you know, at the time.
It is what it is. Yeah, exactly. It is like I was literally tasting the stuff. It wasn't even the final product they ended up with. It was like still in the silver foil packs, no branding on it. They haven't, you know what I mean? Yeah. But anyway, I actually caught up with the lads a while ago. I interviewed them because they're now doing Cali chips and stuff like that. But like there's ones like that I've said no to. But the reason I say no is because I don't want them to waste their time.
Yeah.
Because I know how hard it is for them to be on the hustle to get investment money in and stuff like that. That place of being honest is what I know again from rugby, an honest environment. Mm. So everyone knows there's no gray.
Yeah.
You know, it's what are we doing here? Okay, grand, let's, you know what I mean? And it's clean and yeah, that's what
say
you have
what,
to
say what you mean doing, and mean what you say. Like, I think it's very important. I think it's very, as an entrepreneur, because you know, a lot of people, they mean well and they'll kind of go, oh yeah, no. And that's why I always say to entrepreneurs, I was chatting to students in Trinity 2 weeks ago and I was like, don't keep asking people for advice and opinions, because people will mean well and often give you the wrong advice or just not mean to hurt your feelings and will say, oh yeah, no, it sounds like a great idea. Only when you ask someone for money is it going to become a real conversation around, yes, that's a good idea or not.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't say don't be blunt, but like, I think like, Asher, be grand or don't be awkward. Let's just get along and it's all fucking, sorry, I'm cursing.
It's not that kind of podcast, don't worry.
You know, not just patting your back. I mean, at the end of the day, it's business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you got to be business like with it.
Yeah.
So I just come from a world where like you and yourself, even though you're part of a team, your own thing is like a brand in itself as well. So you get that kind of brand perspective. So you got to manage that as well. And when you're doing a deal with a Vodafone or a Canterbury or whatever, like there's all contracts and all like things around it. So why wouldn't you do that going forward? But again, I suppose it's, and it's changing, but there is a bit of a like don't get above your station kind of mindset, I suppose, at times, which I love in Ireland, and everyone keeps you level, but
it's a fine line.
At the same time, you got to be professional.
Yeah, you got to let people dream as well. You can't just cut people down, you know, if they're dreaming. You know, I was chatting to someone literally just before we hopped on the call. You know, I was saying, you know, mediocre goals, mediocre results. I was like, why not just go for the banger? Like, why not just say,
here, aim for the stars, you land on the moon. But you know what I mean?
That's exactly what I said to him. I said, look, if you have a big plan, even if you get halfway along that plan, you'll still be 100 times further on than most people will be. Whereas if you go, oh, we'll see what happens, you'll be nowhere. Like.
Again, another one I use in a coaching setup, you know, I go, okay, you know, the reason I have goals is like a rugby field. It's easier to score if I know where the try line is. Right. I'm not going to say where you're going to score the try. It could be in the corner. It could be under the posts. It could be just to the left of the posts. I'm not, but at least we know where it is, right? Exactly. And we're playing that way, lads. So let's go that way.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
That's why I was so keen to talk to you about habits and goals, because I think we don't look at that enough, especially in Ireland, especially as entrepreneurs. We kind of go hell for leather, and it's very easy when you have your head down, just you're going. Sometimes you could be going, but you could be running to the side. You could be running straight towards the stand instead of just veering.
And you can be a busy fool as well, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's important. Like, habits don't come easy. You've got to kind of stay at them, I suppose. You got to be consistent with them, and you got to learn what to let go of as well. Mm. And constantly recheck in with it. And the other thing as well, you can't, you know, it's funny you said that, like a lot of people hop in the treadmill and they just go. Right. But
I did 40 minutes. Sure that you don't. I did 40 minutes.
Yeah.
What was your heart rate? We had like a resting heart rate.
That's the thing. And also you can't create, there's this illusion when it comes to business founders, there's an illusion that everyone successful starts their business when they're 21, 22, they're in college, they're Bill Gates, they're Mark Zuckerberg. Most people are in their late 30s, early 40s when they actually make the jump.
Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't just happen overnight. Mm-hmm. Right. And so therefore when you do try to go after it, make sure as well that you don't just put the foot to the floor the whole time. Cause like a bucket of clients that I end up working with a bunch with is guys who are at that like Series A, Series B stage. They've had the foot to the floor for like 3, 4, 5, 6 years. and they're kind of facing burnout now. And they're like, how do I can't keep this going? You know what I mean? Other parts of my life have kind of fallen by the wayside.
I want to talk to you about this. Really, I'm conscious we're nearly out of time, but I want to talk to you about just three quick things before we end up. I want to ask you the book. I want to ask what trends are exciting you. I want to, first of all, talk to you about your coaching. You're doing high level coaching now.
Which one do you want me to tackle first?
Start with the coaching, and then we'll run down to trends, okay, and we'll finish with the book.
Yeah. So I partner with proven entrepreneurs, proven businessmen, proven high performers to kind of go all in with them on purpose driven goals. So what's that? That's working with them to kind of invest in themselves, to really, and their future, to unlock the potential in them. And it's great work. I do a lot of one-on-one. I do a lot of kind of team stuff. Absolutely love it. And it's been a bit of a journey that I've been on. I've had coaches myself, not just like the Joe Schmitz or Stuart Lancaster of the world, but I've had performance coaches since 2008. I'm a big believer in it, and I'm kind of bringing my lessons from sport, obviously 25 years of being in a high performance environment. And then the lessons I've learned since, you know, over the last while in business from the different perspectives that I've come at it from, and then blending it together with through coaching. And it's really enjoyable.
What form does that take in terms of, it's one-to-one, teams can be anything really, can it?
Yeah. Obviously pre-COVID it's in person. And then I have a couple of clients that are not in Ireland. So it was mostly done via Zoom. A bit more difficult when you're doing Zoom via Teams. It's right now it's done through this. And I usually have a big whiteboard there that I have one of those, you know, the sheets that you have.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Put them up there and scribble away while chatting to them. And it's great work to be able to, you know, leave the jersey in a better place is my purpose. And it's great to be able to help people kind of leave that jersey, whatever form it takes for them, in a better, as long as it's not Munster or England, I can't deal with that jersey, but whatever form their jersey may take, to help them to achieve that.
All my Tipperary listeners have just turned off. What trends are exciting, Jamie? Because you're obviously clearly tuned in to the future and what you're looking at. So what trends are exciting you now?
Three. Crypto, fascinating.
Yes.
And I'm talking like it's just Bitcoin. The blockchain technology is interesting, all right, and what it can do. But Bitcoin right now, like it's actually gone through the roof now. I don't think it's hit the high of 2017 yet.
Not far off.
But I still think it's going to go way past that. Like way past that.
I'm banking on it. I'm hoping.
So that whole cryptocurrency fintech space, I find fascinating.
Yeah.
Then the other trend is what do you call it? It's kind of like the last mile mobility.
Yeah.
Sector. Like even take last week, you can see there's such a hunger for it. Like take last week, Moby, for example.
I just read your tweet. I went on your Twitter just before we started. I was like, oh, better see what he's up to today. Moby, very interesting. Very. I read
300,000 on Spark Crowd or whatever it's called in less than 24 hours, 36 hours.
Yeah. That surprised me. I have to say that kind of, I wasn't really paying attention to that space. That's really shocked me.
Well, go check them out and the info that he's putting out there in terms of like the average commute for people and like why electric is probably the way to go for it. Or even just take my daughter. Like my daughter is 2, okay? In whatever, 18 years time, okay? She's just going to ask Siri, who by then is an extended family member, I want to go here. And then out of nowhere, an autonomous electric car will probably pull up and she'll hop in and off she goes. Yeah. Never a teenage boy anywhere near her. And you know what I mean? Away she goes. So yeah. I think I don't know if we're going to own cars. I don't even know if we're going to own bikes, but we're going to still use them. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And I definitely think, you know, for commuting, electric's probably the way to go, because like you arrive and you're not sweaty. You know what I mean? For hilly places, it'll help you get up the hill and just make it a whole lot easier. And it'll be good for the environment.
A friend of mine works in the green in the e-bike space, and for years he's been banging on at me going, e-bike. I used to work in the city, our office in Temple Bar, and I'd be shooting at properties all over the city, and he'd be like, "You're a fool. Not getting an e-bike." And forever I was like, yeah. And I went in and visited him about like 12 months ago in Pier Street there. And we hopped onto, and I was like, oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, is he the place down beside the podcast studios?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Green Air. Richie, is trying to pop in and say hello to him. He's obsessed with it. And I was like, it was only when I got on it though, Jamie, that I kind of was like, ah, okay, now I get it. Because sometimes you have to try these things.
So I don't know about like the ownership model, but like I definitely think what Moby are doing is class. And then the last one is what drones are going to do to, I'll say the logistical industry. I'm going to say specifically food, like where food is going. So you have these mega platforms like a Deliveroo, an Uber Eats, Just Eat, great platforms, amazing platforms. But take Deliveroo. I think for every, like the biggest cost to the Deliveroo is actually the driver or the bike. And it's, so the average guy is doing about two trips an hour, right? And it's costing, I think, about €5 per trip, okay? While a drone like a Mana can do it for 75 cents and can do way more in an hour. And here's the, and they do, I think the average, I was reading the average Deliveroo journey, like from restaurant to customer is like 27 minutes, 28 minutes. So let's call it 30 minutes on average, right? It's 3 minutes with Mana.
To be honest, he fascinates me. I literally look at his Twitter every single day going, and he's an incredible PR man in terms of the Dior and Moore test flights. And you're looking at it because it has a spark of magic.
Yeah, but then and then you start playing it out going, where does this go? Like, because we're already, look at how your on-demand habit is changing. We're in this on-demand world. Like, my daughter won't know the world of extravision. You know,
God forbid.
She won't know the
rest in peace, extravision was great.
She won't know the Friday night struggle of hopping in the back of your mom's car, flying around in the boot, getting down to extravision.
Do they have any left?
Yeah. Dumb and Dumber. You're looking for Dumb and Dumber, but actually, sorry, it's all gone. So you have to rent something that you didn't even want. And you go home with something you didn't want. You watch it, and there's no Netflix and chill, because you're not in your PJs. Because then you have to rewind the thing and go back down to them.
You bring that back before 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm not paying the £3 for that.
You know what I mean? And so like, I don't know where I was going with that, but like, so many different models have been changed, and I think like, this whole on-demand thing that like Amazon Prime is initiating and Netflix and all these things, Spotify, I think that's going to start infiltrating into like on-demand groceries, on-demand whatever, you know what I mean? You'll just be like, in your gaff, I want, you know what? We've no milk and bread and butter or whatever.
Yeah.
Bang, bang, bang. You know, next thing, down into your garden, there you go.
Once it's automated, I think that's the thing. That was obviously having that conversation with someone during the week as well about automation. I think it's going to become slowly, 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 it's here. I think it'll be slowly, 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 suddenly it's everywhere. And it'll be just ubiquitous. That's all we'll know. That's all Harper will know, I think, in 10 years' time. That's just it. That's just, why would you do it any other way? Use humans on a bike? It'd look so... Yeah.
Well, and it's the other thing, like how many of them, well, see, and that's fine for urban dense areas, but what about the suburbs? What about further afield? Mm. They don't have access to it. Mm. You know what I mean? So I actually think the drone in city centers, you know, someone like a Moby or, you know, some kind of last mile will work, but it's more the suburbs and further afield that I think you're going to see something happening with them.
I saw Amazon are testing those little bots, those little automatic, they're like little cooler box with wheels, just zips along, pulls up to your house, it sends you a ping going, I'm outside, Gary. You walk out, the lid pops up, you take out your, I was like, oh, we're living in the future now. Like, it's so simple. Like,
and like, I have a Tesla, and when you go on the motorway and you put it into the semi-autonomous driving, whatever it is, fucking thing drives itself, man.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not far away. It's not far away.
And apparently they could do it. It's just a case of, I mean, the thing can drive itself very much, right? The planes in the sky pretty much fly themselves. You know what I mean? It's there's obviously us, and then there's a whole like ethical decision tree thing that they've got to go through. You know what I mean? That we've all talked about. But that's look, we're going on a rabbit hole there, Gary, that you just asked me for three trends. So I'm going to stop there. They're the three.
Jamie, last question. What book or books have had an impact on you personally or professionally?
Good question. And I always say Michael Phelps' book. I can't remember what it was. It's one based on the Beijing.
I'll put in the notes anyway.
Olympics. I can't remember the name of it. Happy Money, I always think, is a good one.
Happy Money. These are two we haven't had. I'm liking this. This is going on my wish list today.
It's an easy read.
Yeah.
All about the kind of bit of science about how to spend money to actually be happy.
Yeah.
Quite interesting. Apparently there's a buy point about 75,000 that it's not a linear, it's kind of linear up until about $75,000 and then it kind of tapers.
Mm.
And then, the reason I ended up going to Harvard for an executive program, and the professor Anita Elbers, has a great book called Blockbuster. And it's handy for brands to think about this. The course today was all about the business of entertainment, media, and sport. But it's all about like the tentpole strategy kind of used in movies, blockbuster movies. And how to you know, create value and then capture it at that pinnacle moment before it's kind of goes away. Very, very interesting, and how that parlays into different sports and industries.
What was her name, Jamie? I'm just going to put that in there.
Anita Elbers, AnitaElbers.
Okay.
Here's the book. Here. I should hold up my own book and go, buy my book. But no. That's
brilliant.
The book.
Okay,
there.
Excellent. I'll link that in the show notes for everybody so they can check that out. Normally I say, where can people learn more about you? But it's kind of a little bit redundant with you. But where's the best place to follow what you're up to?
I'm across all social. So they're probably the best places. I don't have a holding website or anything like that. I might eventually get around to doing that. Mm-hmm. But I'm on social.
You're a good follow on Twitter. I have to say, I love those little quotes in the mornings now. They get me going in the mornings. I like them.
Ah, yeah. Well, you know what I mean? I'm up to that time anyway, so I might as well share, let the rest of the world know, you know?
Jamie, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us.
No, thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me on. I think you're doing some great things. And you know what? The flip of this is that I'll have to get you on that great business show podcast that myself and Connell and Weiron have. So we'll have to get you on that.
Love to. Jamie, thank you so much.
No worries.
And that was episode 86 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with Jamie Heaslip. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. I got a huge amount. Literally, my notebook is full of little notes and thoughts and sketches that I got from Jamie. If you want to go and check out the show notes, because he mentioned a lot of things there and I've noted them all down, they'll be on the show notes, which is on mrgaryfox.com. If you go there, you'll be able to click through to all the different things he talked about, like Notely, Blinkist, all the companies that he's invested in, and links to Jamie's social as well. I will see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab. Talk to you then.